We're here at the Edinburgh Fringe in the last week. And as I look around the Fringe, more and more people are making decisions they may be glad of or may regret as they look to their tours and they look to their next steps in life. And this show is called Detour. It's written and performed by Diana Dinnerman and directed by Jane Morris. And it's billed as a show about changing your mind. And I guess my intro was because I think that may happen this week. Tell us about why you came up with the idea for this show.
Well, the idea for the show came out of a book that I started writing. I had been on a very direct, linear path in my life. I was an academic. I was doing my PhD in American history. But before in my life, I had been an actor and a dancer, and I had been trained as a performing artist. But I chose a different life at one point, and then once I started living in Los Angeles, I changed my mind. And I decided to go back to being a performing artist. So that's what the show is about, how I came to that decision and what happened to me after I made it.
I'm going to ask you a question about quantum physics now. I mean, one view is that every time we make a big choice, you know, there aren't just ripples. We create two universes, one where you made that choice and one where you made this one. You know, that's quite an interesting thing to guide our decisions.
Yes, it is. I would say that's true. I mean, the decision affects more than you. We don't stop at our skin. So if you think about the energetics in the world and the things that you put out there with your energy and with your intention, collective intentionality is a very powerful thing. So Los Angeles is a city that has, I would say, that kind of frenetic energy. There's all sorts of people changing their minds about all sorts of things all the time. So we're creating new universes all the time.
Some people would think Detour as the long way round to get back to where we were going. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say that. I feel like this decision brought me 360. I feel much more close to the person I was when I was a child than the person I was, say, in my 30s.
So why didn't you finish the book?
Because I figured out that I was hiding in the book, that I wasn't living my life. I was spending my time talking about someone else's life, and I was forgetting to live my own. It was a much more protective position than I'm in now. Now I'm exposed. I work as a writer and a stand-up comedian in Los Angeles, and that's a much more vulnerable place to be. But it took me about a decade to realize that I had buried my own creativity inside a project about somebody else's creativity.
And I guess if we don't disrupt ourselves eventually, we end up much later if we're still alive, looking back on a life of regret.
I think that's possible. In some ways, I think decisions like this are inevitable. You get to a point where you can no longer keep existing in the path you've chosen if it's not right for you. And if I pushed it any farther, I would have become even more depressed and afraid of my own life. But breaking out of this pattern that I had been in about sort of, you know, minimizing my own creative desires, it needed to be broken because I wasn't really living.
Right. I'm going to attempt to attack the whole Western world and see how you react. That we are groomed to go, where am I going? What am I doing? What's my next choice? But another view, actually the writer Edgar Schein called it humble inquiries, just being ready for what guides us.
I think that's true. I mean, I think the tension of an artist is the difference between service and self. And that has a lot to do with it, because as artists, we are meant to create, to be of service to the world and to other people. In that way, we have a voice that can guide other people, but we are so wrapped up in what I want, I need, and am I good enough to do it, that we often don't get to the service part until later. I don't think I really understood my role until writing the show, actually. And this has been a revelation for me in my own career, is because I've gotten to talk to a bunch of people that said, thank you for writing the show. Nobody had ever thanked me for anything before. Or if they had, I was so busy being preoccupied with what it meant about me that I wasn't able to receive what was going on with other people. And I think that you get to a point where you're more comfortable in your artistry and your career, where you really understand that it's not about you, that you are a person that needs to keep a channel open for an expression. And your role as an artist is to do whatever you can to maintain the openness of that channel.
But I guess the reason I'm also interested in that is that when I dialogue with people around the Fringe, particularly younger people, about why they bought their shows, and then people why they brought their shows back and so on, is people don't do the kind of Alice in Wonderland following your curiosity, because we don't trust that our curiosity isn't being shaped by all sorts of stuff out there. And so we play it safe.
I think there's an element of truth to that, but I think what my show is really about is following your curiosity and saying, yes, it is shaped by various different things, but that's okay. It can be reshaped at any time. Yeah. It's a co-creation, your own agency, and then forces in the world. These things are working together, and who would be able to discern what's coming from where?
Yeah.
You can't. You just have to follow your intuition.
What is the thing that follows its intuition?
The thing that follows its intuition?
Where is that? What is it?
Intuition, it's a gutful knowing. That's how I describe it. It's deeply embodied in a person. And writing the show and preparing to write the show, I really got in touch with this inner voice that had a better ideas than my conscious self, really. You know, and I think that most artists have that. If you're deeply engaged in your work, you are responding to the things that are outside of you, but also the things that are coming up inside of you. And it is the meeting place where you create the product. And that's Detour.
How did you write your show?
I wrote it in pieces. I was delivering these personal essays at a workshop in Los Angeles, and these two television writers who were running it said, we want to start a creative lab and we want to produce a full-length evening of work. Do you want to do it? And I said yes, because I had been working on a memoir at the time and I'd been writing that in pieces, and I had these four separate essays about very different things, and then we put those together and I created a show out of that. So we looked for the narrative arc in it, we found the connective tissue between the various different narratives, and then we began putting together a full-length evening of one story about a person starting in one place in her life and ending in another place in her life.
That sounds like a lot of words, though. How did you edit and distill and converge on the final script?
Oh, it was a lot of cutting. I always say, I mean, writing is like sculpture. It's not what you add, it's what you take away that makes the final product. And I had help. I had feedback from four people specifically that said, okay, we don't need this, we don't need that. Because as a writer, I feel my words are precious and I want to keep all of them. But the truth is that you don't need all of them. You only need the ones that give the audience the information that they need to keep turning the page, to stay with you. And so I had a lot of help in editing and saying, you know what, I don't think we need that moment, but we do need that moment because we need to control the emotion in the space in a certain way. And we chose specific things to cut and then other things to heighten and leave in to make sure that the audience was going, that was following the narrative arc the way it needed to be followed.
A real mentor for me was an emeritus professor at the University of Brighton. He's still there. And he taught writing. And he always said, Paul, don't be too proud of your writing.
Uh-huh. I think Allen Ginsberg said that. Kill your darlings.
Yeah.
You got to kill your darlings.
So there's cutting going on, but then there's a final script. What did it feel like when you said, that's the one I'm going to learn?
Bad. I didn't like it. I wasn't comfortable with it. I was like, as a writer, I'm never finished. I don't think anybody really ever is. But you have to decide that it's finished enough for now, because it has to be delivered to an audience, and their needs are more important than your needs. So we had to settle on a script, because when you're working in theater, well, other people need things from you. The lighting person needs cues. They need specific language. You can't change the cues on them in the middle of the show. The sound person needs to know exactly what they're putting sound to. The director needs to know exactly what kind of movement is required to support the story you're telling.
Yeah.
So we had to lock the script. You know, you really want to lock it a few weeks before you go, but I'm a obsessive tweaker. So.
Okay, so the writer kept storming into your performance.
Yeah, I can't help it.
Okay. But did they get on?
Yes. We got on well enough. And then now the writer and I have the writer and me, I'm talking about myself.
Yeah.
We have a nice relationship. The writer in me is not as critical as she used to be.
Right.
It's not perfect, but it's good enough. And even now, doing the show at the Fringe, you know, 25 times in a row, I made an appointment with somebody to fly back home and work on the script because I figured out what's wrong and I didn't know a month ago. And now I'm like, oh, it's not wrong. I just want to change it.
And
so as soon as I leave Edinburgh, I'm going to go rewrite it.
And here in Edinburgh, you know, with show after show, do you decouple properly after a performance, or are you your show 24/7?
No, I'm not. I think I like to keep my work and my life separate. When you're an artist, a performing artist, that's very difficult. But for me, I decided to stay out of town a little bit so I could get away from the Fringe energy and sort of turn that switch off. So I decompress as I walk down the hill every day.
Right.
And that, I put on my headphones and I sort of get out of that performance space, and then I get into a restful space so I can decompress before I have to do it all over again the next day.
Can you give me a number between 5 and 18?
12.
Okay, so the 12-year-old that you remember at you comes to see your show, and then they come up to you afterwards. What does that person say?
Me as 12 would not say anything because I was way too shy. Okay. But a more confident 12-year-old would say, I really liked it. Good job.
Well, thanks for talking to Fringe Review.
Thank you.